How do Americans perceive the Arabic language? One American who came across Arabic earlier than most is Zora O'Neill. You could almost say she came across it at birth.
My mom named me after a Moroccan friend of hers, a woman she met when my parents were living in Tangier in the late 1960s.
Zora's parents were hippies back then. Morocco was on the hippie trail. The woman Zora was named after was a single mother who had her own laundry business.
My mom really admired her because she was an independent woman in Morocco. And that wasn't common in Morocco then, and it wasn't really common in the States either. It was something my mother kind of wished for me. So this laundry woman was kind of a powerhouse. I never met her. My parents came back from Morocco and moved to New Mexico, and we stayed there.
And that's where Zora grew up, kind of wishing she had a more American name. Except that at the same time, something was working inside her. Because at college, she studied Arabic. After she graduated, Zora traveled around the Arab world, picking up more of the language. That was in the 1990s. Then, life happened. She got married, settled down, kind of forgot about her obsession with Arabic. And then it returned. In 2011, Zora went back to Egypt, Lebanon, the Gulf, Morocco, all to hone her language skills. And to find out more about how Arabic varied from one place to the next. In the time since she'd been away, things had changed. Al-Qaeda, 9/11, the US occupation of Iraq, the civil war there, and civil wars in Libya and Syria, ISIS. And what also changed were American attitudes to Arabic. Before, the language was pretty much ignored. But now, it was almost like it had become the language of violence, of sectarianism, of anti-American jihad. If there was one expression that encapsulated it, it was Allahu Akbar. What do you think when you hear that? I'll take a guess. It's something that a suicide bomber shouts just as he detonates his device. But that's not what Zora thinks when she hears it.
Allahu Akbar is like an expression of joy and praise and excitement, and people will say it with exuberance. I was watching the Arab version of The Voice, the, you know, singing competition show, and one of the judges like jumped up on his red chair and was like, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, about somebody singing. There is nothing innately malevolent about that phrase. In fact, quite the opposite. It's God is the greatest, and you are like praising God for this amazing moment you happen to be in. It can be used sort of comically. It can be used sincerely.
It sounded like the guy in The Voice was doing like, OMG.
Exactly. OMG. Allahu Akbar.
I think it's fair to say that Arabic speakers in general know much more about English than we native English speakers know about Arabic. Arabic speakers, a lot of them, have also picked up the limitations of our knowledge.
If you ever go to Dubai, there's this great opportunity. It's called the Sheikh Mohammed Center for Cultural Understanding. And you get this lecture, and you'll probably get it from the same guy who is hilarious. He was like, you know, joke's on you for not understanding Arabic. I can go to a bank and I shout Allahu Akbar and everybody scatters and I get to go to the front of the line. Like, you got punked. Like, we're aware of how you misconstrue our language, and I can take advantage of that sometimes.
Well, there are people here in the U.S. who are like Zora. They're studying the Arabic language. Not many, but some. The numbers are on the increase from a very low base. Nothing compared to Spanish or Mandarin or French. I guess the association with religious hatred and violence, however misplaced that association may be, I guess it just puts people off. Except those who are in the know. We're going to take you to a place now where, at first blush, you might not be expecting this particular group of students to be learning Arabic. This is a private school, a Jewish private school, the Charles E. Smith Jewish Day School of Greater Washington.
The official abbreviation is CESJDS, but that's still kind of long, so most people say JDS.
This is reporter Carol Zoll.
It's in Rockville, Maryland, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C.
And the students who are learning Arabic, how proficient are they?
They sounded very good to me.
اسمي نوح كرين, عمري 16, An askon fi Bedimek Maryland.
That's Noah Green. He's in his third year of Arabic.
Salam alaikum. Ana ismi Jirad Abdullah Muhammad.
And Jared Bauman is from the same 11th grade class as Noah.
Jirad is the Arabic version of Jared, but I chose Abdullah Muhammad because I like those two names.
This isn't just Jared and Noah's school. This is also my school. I was a student here. I started in second grade and went all the way through high school. I graduated in 1984. A few years ago, I heard that the school was offering Arabic, and that for the past 3 years, the Arabic teacher has actually been an Arab. An Arab Israeli, in fact, a Muslim from Israel's Bedouin community. His name is Hani Abo Awad. Now, the school has been offering Arabic for about 10 years, and until 2013, the Arabic classes were taught by American teachers. But then the school hired a new teacher, Mr. Abo Awad. Noah Green, one of the 11th graders who just introduced themselves, was a high school freshman that year, and he'd been looking forward to learning Arabic since 7th grade. He told me about the moment when he and his classmates met the new teacher.
On the first day of school in 9th grade, we had Arabic in the first period of the day, so we're all really excited. We come in and we see Mr. Abu Awad, and we're like, what? This is crazy. This is like, we don't know what's going to happen. We didn't know there was going to be a new teacher. It was all sort of new to us, and it was new to him.
I don't know if I would have had the same reaction as Noah. Back when I was at the school, we had a fairly international and multilingual mix, both of students and teachers. We had a lot of kids from Iran who spoke Farsi, who just poured into the school after the Iranian Revolution in 1979. There were also kids from what was then the Soviet Union who spoke Russian. We had a few Brazilians who spoke Portuguese, and there was even a Scottish girl in my class at one point. One of my French teachers was originally from Belgium, and we had a lot of Israeli teachers, and they taught most of the Hebrew courses. But they were Jewish Israelis. We never had any Arab Israeli teachers. So when I heard about the school's Arabic teacher, I wanted to meet this guy. How had he, an Arab, a Muslim, a Bedouin even, which is a word meaning desert dweller and refers to people who were once nomadic, you know, how had he ended up here? And how did he like teaching at my alma mater, a suburban American Jewish day school in Rockville, Maryland?
It's so nice to meet you in person.
Yeah, finally. Yeah.
I met Hani at the entrance to the school. He's 35 with dark hair and eyes, a quiet demeanor, and a big smile.
My name is Hani Abu Awad. It's my fourth year in the U.S. and my third year in GDS.
He was wearing a blue button-down shirt and kind of khaki-colored pants. Certainly nothing that might suggest a nomadic lifestyle. And actually, when I later asked him about the Bedouin label and how he thinks about his identity, he said it's complicated.
I'm Arab. I'm Muslim. Bedouin is like style of life. It's not, you know, it's a kind of identity, but if I choose between Arab and Bedouin, I would say Arab who lives in Israel. So it's a unique situation, I guess.
This is the library.
So the first thing we did was to take a tour of the school. It's actually in a different building now than when I was there, so it was all new to me. And as Hani showed me around, students would occasionally come up to him and say hi, some in Arabic and some in Hebrew. Hani is the kind of teacher that kids like. He's still young enough to kind of be their friend, but old enough to command their respect.
So I basically moved in the end of 2011 to the U.S. for school.
School was grad school at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Hani had grown up in a small town in the south of Israel and gone to college and done a master's in Arabic language teaching at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. In 2013, about a year and a half after coming to the U.S., he saw an ad for the teaching job at JDS. It just seemed perfect.
They want someone to teach Arabic, and they preferred someone who knows Hebrew. It's my job. And I sent my CV to the school, and they responded the same day.
Hani got the job. He now teaches both Arabic and Hebrew classes at the school.
It was like normal, you know, to work in Jewish school with Jewish people, like, because, you know, I came from Israel, so it's nothing like weird for me in this situation.
But that's not to say that coming to the U.S. wasn't a big change for him. He'd never spent time around Americans, and it was a shock at first.
When I came here, the first few months, I was like, what I'm doing here?
But then he got used to Washington and really started to like it.
The multicultural, the diversity, and the food. Oh my gosh, like the food, I never had like Chinese food or Jamaican food or Ethiopian food or Mexican food or all, you know, the kind of foods that you have in DC. And for the first year, it was amazing, like just to explore everything.
Another surprise for Hani was that Americans were actually nice.
When I was in the Middle East, all I like hear and know about America is the bad things. You know, the war in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and all the negative things, you know, that we hear. But here, when I just came and I lived here in DC, and then when I started working here, I just figured out and I knew how nice actually are the Americans. And when I'm telling like people back home, Americans are nice, are you serious? And they said, yes, they are very nice.
And his job, teaching Arabic at a Jewish school, is also nice.
I find myself like enjoying coming to work. I'm coming with smile. It's very good community, kehila, and I love it.
That word, kehila, is Hebrew. It means community, but has all sorts of connotations that are particular to Jewish tradition. The way he uses it is typical of the way that Hani seems to have been able to integrate into the life of the school, to really understand what it's about.
I think my mom prays for me all the time, so that's her fault.
Well, if Hani's mom is also praying for his Arabic class to be popular with students, then her prayers have been answered.
Israeli ma kam ma habit, yeah, ma habu.
Aroma.
No, but fi yani fi.
Arabic is an elective at JDS, offered starting in the ninth grade. And while there were only four students in this past year's senior class, the freshman class was much bigger.
This year we have like huge class. We have 15 students in Arabic 1, which was really surprising.
Let me just cut in here, Carol, and ask you this. Hani, why is it a surprise to him that the class size is so big?
Well, you know, the kids at this school already take another language. They study Hebrew, so they don't have to take another foreign language. And the other thing is, this isn't such a big school. There are only about 80 kids in each year. So for them to get 15 kids signing up for the freshman Arabic class was a real surprise to them.
So is this the only Jewish school in the U.S. that teaches Arabic?
No, it's definitely not. It's hard to get good data, but I'm aware of at least a handful of schools that are or have been teaching Arabic over the last decade.
Why do you think it's a popular subject, though? I mean, I understand why Jewish Israelis might be studying Arabic. That makes a lot of sense. But what about Jewish kids in America? I mean, that's a completely different prospect.
Well, you know, actually, there are a lot of reasons. I mean, first of all, there were a lot of Jewish communities in the Arab world up until quite recently. So for a lot of Jews, Arabic is actually a heritage language. The second thing is Hebrew and Arabic are actually really similar. So if you do want to learn Arabic, having Hebrew already is a huge head start. So it kind of makes sense. And then the third thing is, you know, Arabic is really relevant to these kids. I mean, a lot of them are going to go to Israel at some point, either on family vacations or for study abroad, and they will come across this language there. And don't forget that these are kids who are very aware of the Arab-Israeli conflict, very aware of the tensions between Israel and its Arab neighbors. And a lot of them want to find ways to build bridges between the Jewish and Arab worlds. And, you know, one of the students I met, a kid named Daniel Levy, is a great example of some of these reasons. His parents are Israeli, and he told me that he spends about 4 to 6 weeks in Israel every summer.
So just walking around the streets in Israel and just seeing that in Israel the Arabs are our neighbors. And I always thought it was crazy that while they do live next to us in Israel, I don't speak their language. And while most of them, the ones living in Israel, do speak Hebrew, I thought, like, if I'm ever going to connect with them in any way, I need to speak their language.
Daniel was one of the students in the 12th grade class that I spoke with. He's got short dark hair and he was wearing jeans and a black t-shirt the day I met him. He's kind of wiry, a friendly looking kid, and he told me about how since starting to learn Arabic, he'd managed to strike up a few conversations with Arabic speakers. Once was in an airport when he spoke with an Egyptian man, and last summer when he was in the Israeli city of Jaffa, a stranger came up and asked if Daniel would take a photo of him.
And then I started speaking him in Arabic. Oh, I was like, this is a good opportunity to speak with us. So I started asking him, like, where he's from and just, like, about his family, how it is living in Israel. And honestly, like, without speaking Arabic, I would have never opened up that conversation to him.
Do you think he was surprised that you could speak Arabic?
Yeah, I think he was, especially because I think I used like many words from like modern standard Arabic. So he kind of looked at me, this like this funny look, like, oh, where do you know that from?
Daniel's enthusiasm for striking up conversations in Arabic isn't just the zeal of a newbie language learner. It's also about wanting to make a difference.
Do you think more Jews, both in Israel and in the rest of the world, should be learning Arabic? I mean, do you think it would make a difference in the world?
I think it would, mainly because I think a language is what defines someone, defines your home, it defines your culture, it defines the food you eat, defines where you come from. And especially with the conflict, the first way to connect is speaking their language. So therefore, yes.
I asked that same question to one of Daniel's classmates, a girl named Ilana Kravitz.
Well, people have proposed in Israel that all Israeli kids in public school should learn Arabic, and I think that's a great idea because there's a big disconnect between Jewish Israeli kids and Arab Israeli kids or just Palestinian kids. And also, I think there's no reason for Jews not to learn Arabic, especially if they know Hebrew, because it makes it so much easier. And once you see the similarities between the two languages, you really see the similarities between the two heritages and between the two cultures.
Ilana was also in the 12th grade class that I met. She has dark-rimmed glasses and long, curly brown hair, and she'll be a freshman at Columbia this fall. She is the second person in her family to study Arabic at JDS. Her older sister was actually in one of the first classes offered at the school. Ilana told me she's amazed how much her knowledge of Hebrew has helped her with Arabic.
I was at an Arabic program over the summer with a lot of kids who were at the same level of Arabic as me or were below me, and it was interesting how quickly I could hear something that I'd never heard before and just kind of guess what it was. Even if it was just barely similar to Hebrew, I could totally estimate what it might be and extrapolate from that. And I had a basis of knowledge that no one else there had.
I asked Ilana what sort of reactions she's had to the fact that she's learning Arabic.
Most of the reactions I've gotten have been positive, but I have one shirt that has Arabic on it from my summer program. And I was wearing it once, and a bunch of people that I didn't even know came up to me, and they asked, oh, is that a terrorist prayer? Is that the Shahada or something? And I was no, it's just a nice English saying that they translated into Arabic. I was just walking in D.C. It was kind of uncalled for.
Ilana had gotten that T-shirt at a summer language program she'd gone to in Vermont.
And then also, when I was at the summer program, we were in a 4th of July parade. We were wearing the Arabic shirts, and then people in the town that we were walking through actually yelled at us and called us terrorists, which was kind of scary and also worrying because people have such negative associations with the Arabic language.
It must have been a weird experience for you to experience that kind of prejudice because you were wearing the Arabic on the T-shirt.
Yeah, there were actually a few girls who were wearing hijab, and they were the people I think that they were mostly yelling at. And they said that they were almost used to it because people have all come up to them and had negative comments before. But it was kind of insight into how they've been maybe persecuted or they've been treated badly.
Whatever the students' reasons for studying Arabic, there's no doubt that learning this language brings up some serious issues, like the Arab-Israeli conflict or the treatment of Muslims in the U.S. The day I visited the 12th grade class, for example, they were watching a news clip from Al Jazeera TV and practicing their conversational skills by discussing the Arab Spring. My own experience of studying a language in high school was very different from that. I took French, and it was just a lot of fun. There was nothing about it that focused my attention on geopolitics or the news. It was one of my favorite classes, and I remember it as being lighthearted, although maybe learning the subjunctive did bring on some existential angst. Funnily enough, some of my most vivid memories of French class revolve around what were basically surrealist works of literature. There was a poem we had to memorize once about a gigantic ant that didn't exist. And we also read the French play Rhinoceros, about a town where all the people gradually turn into rhinos. I still remember how, as we read through that play, each of us had to strap a cardboard horn onto our heads as our characters succumbed to rhinoceritis. To be fair, that play is about some pretty heavy political themes. Still, the only thing at stake for me there was my GPA. I wondered what was at stake now for Hani. I had asked the students about why they wanted to study Arabic, but what about their teacher? What was at stake for him in all this?
For me to teach in a Jewish school, it's not just a job. I think I feel responsibility to represent something.
Hani started talking to me about stereotypes and about how he wants to show his students an image of Arabs that's different from the stereotypes that are common in, say, American movies or TV shows. He told me that one day he was joking around with some of the kids. They'd complimented him on a new haircut and said maybe he should go to Hollywood.
I said, yeah, I'm thinking to go to Hollywood. And they said, oh, you should.
But he said no, because I have a heavy accent. And they're going to cast me as a terrorist or something.
I do have heavy accent, but I'm trying to be like maybe something else, not just, you know, the bad guy.
Hani said he made a joke of it with his students, but at the same time, it wasn't a joke at all, because the Arab bad guy image is so common.
Especially now, like once any stupid guy did something in the name of Islam, they start talking about all the Muslims all over the world.
And that's why he says he feels responsibility.
So at least in my corner here at the school, I'm trying to give them like the different picture. I'm talking about my family, my brother wedding, that my dad had a stroke in the summer. So at the end of the day, we're human being. We have our issues, our problems. And the majority actually of Muslims are good people who want peace, want to raise the kids, to have a nice job, to come back home like 5 o'clock and, you know, have tea. Not everyone like thinking about bringing back the Islamic empire.
While Hani may feel a responsibility, as he says, to represent something within the school community, sometimes he's found himself in a very different role, representing the school and his work there to people outside that community. I asked him what kind of response he's had from family and friends about his job.
My family is cool with this. And they actually like that I'm in a Jewish school.
But not everyone has been as supportive.
I got a few negative comments about me teaching in a Jewish school, specifically from other Palestinians who said, why you do that? So I'm explaining to them, like, it's important for me to teach in that school and not other school because you represent something. And it's not just teaching. I can't teach anywhere. But here it's unique because you have message to deliver. I'm not like going around the campus and saying stuff. I'm just like how I behave, how I'm being nice, how I'm being professional, how I'm being like, you know, respectful for everyone. That's how you actually represent your culture and your nationality and your religion.
I asked Hani whether it was a weird moment for him when he found himself explaining why he does what he does. Did he suddenly feel like he was representing the Jewish community to his Palestinian friends?
Yeah, yes. And it's amazing how this communication between both sides can make them feel fear, actually, from each other. Even in America, like, it's far away from the conflict and still they have it. I have to say and be honest with you that the last 4 years were the best years in my life.
Hani says he wants to stay at JDS for a while and develop the Arabic curriculum there. He'd like it to be a model for other Jewish schools. And as for the students, even if it does seem to me that studying French may have been a more carefree option, that doesn't mean that the kids in the Arabic classes aren't having fun. Au contraire, they learn songs and play games in their classes, just like we did in French. Back in April, the school had an Arabic week with Arabic food served in the cafeteria. And at the end of every period, they played Arabic music over the intercom instead of the regular bell, which is such a great idea and really fun to imagine, say, your physics or history class ending that way. And of course, the most fun part of all is just learning to speak a new language in the first place, trying out new sounds and gestures, working on your accent, being able to have a conversation for the first time. And seeing the world through different words.
It's me, Levi.
And I don't think that will ever change.
Carol Zoll is a reporter here in Boston. And after graduating from JDS, Carol herself went on to study several languages, including, and there's a bit of a theme here, Latin, Welsh, and Scottish Gaelic. I'd like to thank Carol in one of those languages, but I don't dare. That is the pod for today. Thanks to Zora O'Neill for telling us her stories of learning Arabic. She wrote a book about it that's just come out. It's a great read. You don't need to understand a word of Arabic to enjoy it. It's called All Strangers Are Kin: Adventures in Arabic and the Arab World. I'll post show notes at pri.org/language. There'll be some photos there of some of the people that Carol talked about for her story. We're also on Facebook. There's a World in Words page. And on Twitter, at LingoPod. I'm on Twitter, at Patry Cox, PatriCox. If you didn't hear the previous episode, give it a listen, why don't you? It's our first ever live show, recorded at the New York Public Library. We had a blast. Sounded like the audience did, too. Nina, or I, or both of us, will be back with another episode soon. Thanks for listening.